The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
Hey, everybody. Ding dong. Which old witch? Donald Trump. We've got an optimistic one today, you know, for change. Because my first post-election night podcast, and how could you come away from the last few days without thinking, wow, whoa, that was a roller coaster. That was disturbing. And one thing that's disturbing, of course, is my faith that I've always had in American polling. Of course, we have a problem sometimes in our nation, finding something to put our faith in. And for the longest time now, it's been especially during periods leading up to an election, it seems like the one thing that we Americans really can place a lot of faith in, our hopes and dreams for ourselves and our families and our futures, polling and polling aggregators who crunch the polling numbers, the Nate Silvers of this world, because that's what we always look to. Polls are numbers. They're something you can wrap your head around to help you understand where Americans stand, who we are, what we know, what we believe. And okay, let's face it. Pollsters missed it 4 years ago. What they hadn't seen is that Americans had become fed up with the elites in this country, and that Hillary Clinton had come to represent the elites, fairly or not. The narrative was that Hillary went to Wellesley, Yale Law, married a classmate from Yale, and joined an elite law firm in Arkansas, because that's where Bill was from, and that she and Bill had made all those elite contacts at Yale and at law and Bill at Oxford. And they were just ambitious and plotted together to become president and first lady and got all high and mighty and did really well for themselves and their friends who were also educated elites, the meritocracy. And then after leaving office for a while, they formed this foundation that got its all its money from famous wealthy elites and the Sultan of Brunei and Wall Street types who all knew the system and got rich and gave some of their spoils to the Clintons, who, you know, he did some good things like save, you know, millions of lives in Africa, but not like the Trump Foundation, which had just was a really you know, just like a family thing. It also was, by the way, it turned out to be a criminal enterprise, the Trump Foundation. But pollsters had missed that. They thought Hillary was going to win. And the story was that Americans really resented the elites. And while the middle class and working folks had been slipping for decades, that was what was happening there. But they missed that. And post-World War II prosperity, where you could work in a car factory, say, and make a great life for you and your family with a $30 an hour job, raise a family, have a cabin at the lake, that was gone. That was disappearing. And we were leaving behind people in Youngstown and Erie and Flint and Green Bay and on the Iron Range in Minnesota. And we had this guy, Donald Trump, come around, and we knew him to be wildly successful and a real estate magnate, a builder, and a compelling reality show star, a tough, no-nonsense, extremely competent. And he was on the side of the working guy, and pollsters somehow missed that. And Marcus took a flyer on him, and he turned out to be just a nightmare and a psychopath who had paid off a porn star and lied every time he opened his mouth and had no attention span, zero attention span, and spent his time tweeting and was mean and vindictive. And yeah, some Americans were buying his act when the economy seemed to be, you know, continuing on the glide path that he inherited from Obama. So he still had a base of supporters who didn't take him literally, but took him seriously. And then COVID. And suddenly the ICUs were jammed with people on ventilators and the economy just shut down. And then millions lost their jobs and a couple hundred thousand Americans died and were dying. And he didn't seem to be taking it seriously. And then about 8 weeks ago, we learned that he considered our men and women in the military to be suckers and losers. And then we learned from Bob Woodward that he had known all along about the seriousness of COVID and actually just lied to us because he didn't want, you know, hurt the stock market. And still, he continued not to take it seriously and didn't wear a mask. And Americans were continuing to die and losing their jobs, and our economy is in free fall. And we learned that this fabulously wealthy guy was using his job to make more money for himself and his family, and that he paid $750 a year in taxes. And he kept telling us that COVID was under control and going away. And he was saying that the last month of the campaign, and that that shouldn't be about COVID. And then he got COVID. And yet he decided to do rallies that were super spreader events just as COVID was spiking again in the upper Midwest, where he finished the campaign. He was saying he was going to fire the most respected guy in the country, Anthony Fauci, right after the election. So going into last Tuesday, the polls were telling us that this was going to be a blowout. And again, the polls were just so wrong. The Washington Post had a poll a couple days before the election saying that Biden was up 17 points in Wisconsin. And then the night of the election, my God, and all, I hate to bring you back to last Tuesday, but it looked like it was going to be a repeat of 2016. Oh my God, that was a long night. I was talking to Chris Rock, talking about elites. I mean, he's, man, what an elite. We were talking about pollsters, and he said that pollsters are like a bad reliever. You know, the closer they bring in who always blows it. Oh, the manager's bringing out his closer, Nate Silver, who's had a few bad outings lately. Yeah, Bob, he seems to be tipping his pitches because he's blown a number of these situations lately. Oh, you're right, Barney, but for some reason, the skipper really likes this guy, and he keeps bringing him in these situations. Oh, there's a long ball. It's going, oh. So election night was a nightmare, and for a number of hours there, it looked like we were going to see a repeat of 2016, but finally around 2 or 3 in the morning, even though it was still kind of bleak for some of us, it started to look like it might work out and Biden had a path to win this thing. And that's when Trump could not help himself and went out in the East Room and showed his hand. Let's play a little bit of that.
I want to thank the American people for their tremendous support. Millions and millions of people voted for us tonight. And a very sad group of people is trying to disenfranchise that group of people. And we won't stand for it. We will not stand for it. We were getting ready for a big celebration. We were winning everything, and all of a sudden it was just called off. The results tonight have been phenomenal, and we are getting ready. I mean, literally, we were just all set to get outside and just celebrate something that was so beautiful, so good. We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election. We did win this election. So our goal now is to ensure the integrity, for the good of this nation. This is a very big moment. This is a major fraud in our nation. We want the law to be used in a proper manner. So we'll be going to the U.S. Supreme Court. We want all voting to stop. We don't want them to find any ballots at 4 o'clock in the morning and add them to the list, okay? It's a very sad moment. To me, this is a very sad moment.
So he was basically saying he had won. He knew he had won, but the election was being stolen. The Democrats were engaged in this tremendous fraud and corruption and yada yada. And that's when you knew he was losing. And at that moment, he lost any standing to challenge the outcome of the election. And that was it. I mean, even Chris Christie just blasted Trump, saying there was absolutely no basis for that. I mean, it was great. That was it. He had forfeited any opportunity of ever challenging it again. As you know, I record this a few days ahead of when it drops. I'm recording this on a Friday. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what he's going to do. But my God, there's nobody. Is there anybody who doesn't know what happened? And is there anybody who's going to not go, okay, come on, man. Come on. Please leave. Please, please leave. And you know what? Chris Rock said something to me. Chris said something that was really interesting. He said, you know, the baby always wails the loudest before it goes to sleep. And so there'll be some wailing. And then what Chris said was that during the holidays, he'll go down to Florida. And then we'll never really hear from him again. He's not going to go to tea. He and Melania are not going to go to tea with President-elect Biden and Jill. They're not going to do that. He's not going to go to the inaugural. You're just not going to see him for a while. Oh, we'll maybe see him in New York in February or with his new network or something. But no, he's... Oh, wow. This is actually great. Now, okay, we can talk about the Senate. We're have Norm Ornstein with us today. And Norm is just, I think you all know Norm. He's been on the podcast a number of times. He, to me, is the super pundit, Norm Ornstein. You know, he's an old white Jewish guy. And so there's something not to be said about that. But so am I. So am I. This is going to be a great one, folks, you know, for a change.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Craftsman days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V26 tool power tool combo kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high quality, high performance products empower you to build on. Visit Lowe's and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 7/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18. Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Milo's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only 6/19 through 6/25. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
So the long national nightmare is over, huh?
The long national nightmare is over. Now prepare for the next long national nightmare, which is what we call the transition. And, you know, it's these are often difficult, even when it's within the same party. The transition between Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush had its moments of tension as the Reagan loyalists were kind of resentful that they were leaving. Usually, you have norms that are observed and there are laws in place. And this time we have a president who's going to do none of that. And his goal is going to be to make sure that nothing goes well for Joe Biden and that there is a scorched earth when he finally takes office. So, you know, we can exult in the moment.
Michael Lewis wrote The Fifth Risk about the transition from Obama to Trump. And basically that was all about how Trump just didn't do one.
Yeah.
And basically thought, you know, he said to Chris Christie, who was in charge of the transition until Trump won, and then Jared got rid of him and replaced him with, I guess, Pence and himself.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, Trump had said to Christie, well, you know, we can just get together after the victory party and for an hour, and you and I can plan the administration, how the government's going to work. But what can he do that's more destructive? Because let's give him some ideas.
Okay. First, let me issue the warning here. And for any loyal civil servants, and I mean loyal to the Constitution and the law, take heed. There are going to be many efforts and enormous temptation to destroy any incriminating evidence. You remember from The Sopranos when Carmela and Tony, as they saw the law coming, broke through the ceiling to get all the money down and out. In this case, one of the things to keep in mind is that Trump made all of these phone calls to foreign leaders from the Situation Room that were so alarming that they put him in a deep freeze. I suspect they're going to try and defrost them and then burn them.
What is the deep freeze? What's the physical deep freeze just for me and our listeners?
In effect, they put them in a place where nobody could get access to them without the approval of the president. You know, it was like the most top secret thing in the entire government. Think of having a safe inside a safe inside a safe. But they're all going to become accessible when Biden becomes president. And very likely there's stuff on those phone calls. We don't even know what's in the phone calls that he made from his cell phone without all those people present in the Situation Room. The cell phone, you're not going to get access to, except that we know that most likely every foreign government has access to it. You know, these other calls are going to be there, and they're probably calls to Putin and to Erdogan, to Sisi and to MBS, and who knows what he discussed that may be embarrassing or it may be incriminating. Then we've got all of the documents, including the emails and exchanges. Just to pick one example, Wilbur Ross, the Secretary of Commerce, who flat out lied to Congress about adding a citizenship question to the census, who then defied a court order to continue the census through the time period when it was supposed to be continued. Imagine if there are all kinds of emails and other evidence that this was deliberate, including deliberately lying and other things that are flat out incriminating.
Isn't there a statute about, like, Wilbur Ross is statutorily is too old to prosecute?
You know, just consider,
I mean, doesn't he have that protection?
Just consider that we prosecuted former Nazis right up into their 90s. So, you know, it's
when you're right, you're right, Norm.
Yes. You could go through every cabinet member and, of course, all of those in the White House and find some of the same things.
Tony and Carmela, you know,
yeah,
went through the ceiling, get the stuff. What are Melania and Donald doing about this incriminating stuff? Are they taking an axe to this? I mean, what do they do?
One could imagine that they take it and try to destroy it, that you're going to find cabinet members and others who are going to try to cover their tracks. Those would be violations of the law. violations of the Presidential Records Act, violations of the larger Records Act, the Government Records Act. And we need to be sure that career civil servants don't participate in this, or they could be liable, and that they report any evidence of wrongdoing. We're setting up a whistleblower hotline through the organization, the Project on Government Oversight, or POGO. So that's one thing. Now, that's, you know, not directly related to blowing things up for Biden. Let's talk about what he could do in blowing things up for Biden.
First of all, wait a minute. Are we getting ahead of ourselves? Is there any there for him fighting this?
We are getting ahead of ourselves. I'm headstrong. Thank you for reining me in. My nightmare scenario before our long national nightmare was over was that we would get to 270 electoral votes for Biden, 268 for Trump, 270, of course, being the magic number needed to win. The nightmare was they would manipulate it and get an elector to switch. I was hoping we would get well over that. I was hoping that we would get at least to 290 with Pennsylvania, and we're there. So it's not like they're going to be able to get an elector to switch and, you know, change this so that it goes right to the House. What we do know is that we're going to get a recount in Georgia. We may get a recount in Arizona or Nevada. That'll take us a little bit of time.
I have a question about that, which is, do you do a recount in the, I know you do a recount if you're me and you're running for the Senate and you win by, you know, you have a margin of 200 votes or something. Does it make any difference? What difference does it make if it doesn't make any difference? In other words, why spend the money doing a recount in Nevada? Why do a recount maybe in Arizona, maybe in Georgia? Why do them if it doesn't make any difference?
So here's their strategy. And it's going to be a twofold strategy. And I hope that we have enough of a comfort zone here that none of this plays out. You get an election, you count the votes, you certify the results. The certification in states is normally done by the legislature, which has the authority over the electors. And every state has said that the winner is the winner of the popular vote. That has to be done by December 8th. It's called the safe harbor date. Then the electors' drop dead date to meet in their respective states is December 14th. It's a twofold strategy. One is delay. So you know what happens with a recount where you had the results free and clear with enough time for you to meet with your class and be sworn into the Senate on January 3rd. The legal challenges took months and months over a small number of ballots. They're going to try to flood the zone and delay this so that if any of these states, especially Pennsylvania, goes past the safe harbor date, then the legislature is going to say, well, we're going to have to simply preempt this process and choose our electors. Or they may say, never mind the recount, we're just going to let the legislature do this. And this is what Newt Gingrich and Lindsey Graham and other odious figures, I've searched for the right word, odious I think is the best one, are suggesting.
Lindsey Graham is a senator and
he's
just got
reelected. He's chairman of the Judiciary Committee. Yes.
And he really said this.
Yes, he said, you know, what Lindsey has said yesterday and today is there's widespread evidence of fraud and we need to get to the bottom of it, and that all options have to be on the table. You know, there, one of the things that's happening here is they're spreading disinformation that in Pennsylvania, the Republican observers are not being allowed in the room, which is simply a lie, and that's all over the web. They're trying to set up conditions so that they could have the legislature preempt the process and choose electors for Trump. Now, if that happens, the governor is going to say, never mind that. We're going to follow the law, which is the winner of the popular vote gets the electors, and I'm going to certify a slate of Biden electors.
The way of the state popular vote, just to make sure.
Yes. So you have contested electors, and the contested electors go to Congress. And Congress has to agree on January 6th, the House and Senate, on which slate of electors to certify. And if they don't agree, then you don't have those electoral votes. Now, if Biden is over 270 without Pennsylvania, that just isn't going to work.
Or they try Nevada and...
Or they try Wisconsin and Michigan, where you also have state legislatures that are Republican that, you know, might try the same gambit. And if that happens, you know, we could get to a point where you don't have anybody with a majority. And then ostensibly the House voting by state would choose a president, which would be Republican. Now, that would be a coup.
Boy, I can't see this. Boy, I can't see this. I mean, who's going to be their lawyer? Who's their lead lawyer? Rudy Giuliani? I mean, yeah. Are there any respected lawyers on their side?
You know, Jared Kushner said, we've got to find our Jim Baker. Jim Baker, of course, being the key figure that they used to win Florida.
Sure. Bush v. Gore.
In 2000. And so my reaction to that was, we need our Jim Baker. We're getting Rudy Giuliani. It's like saying, we need our Laurence Olivier. Let's get Curly Larry and Moe, which is a little bit of a...
If you're doing a comedy.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a diss to the Three Stooges, who actually were quite accomplished. But, you know, given that they were brilliant, you wouldn't exactly want one of them to substitute for Laurence Olivier in Hamlet, say. So that you're forced to get crazy Rudy Giuliani to be your lead figure here tells you where they are. And what it tells you also is that the respectable and respected Republican litigators, and there are some brilliant ones like Ted Olson and Paul Clement, former solicitors general, they're not touching this stuff with a 10-foot pole.
Well, they're probably all never Trumpers.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not sure. And they've certainly represented clients who are kind of on the edge. Paul Clement has. But they're not going anywhere near this because they know that it's dangerous and it's also ridiculous in legal terms. But, you know, ridiculous, when you see what we have on the Supreme Court now, that doesn't mean ridiculous can't work.
I'd rather go back to Tony and Carmella.
Let's assume that our long national nightmare of the election is over.
Okay.
We have all these warning signs. And what I'm waiting for right now, and I haven't seen it yet, because this is just at a dangerous moment, and Trump is not just throwing gasoline on the fire. I mean, he's picking whatever accelerant he can through his reckless statements. And, you know, you have to worry about people out there. The Proud Boys, after all, have been standing by, getting involved. And when you get figures like the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, having won his reelection, doubling down on his cult-like and reckless behavior, it's a dangerous time.
I'm kind of amazed that there has not been, and I'm knocking on wood here, but I'm a little amazed that there just hasn't been any actual violence at all. I mean, I know those that caravan tried to,
yeah,
you know, push the bus off to the side, the Biden bus, yeah, and that there were some people congregating in Maricopa County, that place where they're counting, yeah, but no one has actually done any real violence yet, and knock on wood. But I just kind of feel like, I mean, even Fox News is just really cooling its jets. I mean, they're basically saying, you know, the Chris Wallace's there, or the Chris Wallace. Yeah. I think there's one. But I mean, they are not they're not lying, right?
You know, it's interesting. The decision desk at Fox has been the gold standard here in the past. And of course, Trump and his people went absolutely ballistic when Fox called Arizona before anybody else. And, you know, Fox has not been all in on Trump with this stuff so far, which is definitely a positive element here. And maybe that will continue. What I've been hoping is that Fox, having called Arizona, waiting until they actually get the official over 270. I was hoping it would happen last night so that they would break into Sean Hannity's show to say Joe Biden has won the presidency. Just the delicious element of Sean Hannity's show being the place where for the first time, Joe Biden was officially.
I don't watch Fox. I don't even have it. I don't have Fox. I don't pay for it. And so I don't know what their graphics are like when some breaking news happens. Yeah. But that would be a nice thing to see. It'd be Sean Hannity
saying while Trump was watching
some awful thing. Yeah. And then boom, breaking.
It just would have been so delicious. But
it didn't happen.
No. Well, that would have been one of these small pleasures, like the extra maraschino cherry on top of the sundae. But we have the sundae, it appears, you know, especially if we're over 300 electoral votes. And it looks like there's a real possibility that that's where we will be. Georgia is still a little problematic until we get some more votes in, because there are something like 8,900 overseas ballots, not just military.
Right. And a lot of those are our troops, although yeah. I think our troops now as a group are pro Biden.
Those ballots are going to include people working overseas, along with the loser and sucker ballots from the military. So you would hope that they have come to realize what they've got now in a commander in chief. But you want to have enough of a margin for Biden that even if they break some for Trump, it's not enough to
Again, it goes to my question of if you have well over 270 and you have a recount, say, in Nevada, and it doesn't make any difference.
No, that's right.
What is the point in doing it? What's the point in spending that money? And I guess the point is for history to know what the electoral
count was or something. Well, there's a reason for that. And, you know, candidates, the laws are different in states. Some states have automatic recounts if it's within a quarter or a half a percent. Others allow candidates to call for a recount. In some cases, like in Wisconsin, you don't have to pay for it if you call for it. If it's within, I think, a quarter of a percent, if it's a half a percent, you got to pay for it, which is like $3 million. But I'm not so concerned that you get a recount, which now, because the ballots are, you know, calculated in a mechanical fashion, is not going to take a huge amount of time.
Well, no. I mean, I can tell you it doesn't take all that long. My recount was settled, as you said, in time, in time for me to be seated with my class. But the Republicans wanted to delay me all they could. And in my state, in Minnesota, you aren't seated until the Supreme Court decides. And Coleman, you know, I won in time to be seated in January 3rd with my class, but they delayed me until July because I was the 60th vote. And when I finally got there, we finally were able to do things like the Affordable Care Act.
And what was it? I kind of remember Norm Coleman making a statement right after the election about counting the votes. What was it that he said?
Well, he was ahead.
Yes. And what did he say?
After election night. And he said that the margin was too wide. It was 700 votes or something at that point. And then you do a thing called a canvas.
Yeah.
That's a reconciliation. And what you do is, you know, when people call in to the Secretary of State from Ely or something, and they go like 128 to 96, sometimes someone writes it down wrong. So you have what's called a canvas, and usually that total changes a little bit. And that went from like 700 and something to 225 or something. So when we started the recount, it was 225, and every ballot was looked at. That's what I'm saying. We had to have people at every table. There are counting tables, and there is an election judge, and then a Coleman person on his right or his left, and then a Franken person on the other, and they look at every ballot.
I was just trying to point out Norm's hypocrisy, you know, by saying...
I don't like to do that.
Yeah, I know. But I was doing it for a reason, not just sticking to Norm. One of the funniest things that's happened here is that the Trump people are simultaneously saying, stop the count in Pennsylvania, where he's been ahead, as they did in Michigan and Wisconsin, and continue the count in Arizona and Nevada, where he's been running behind. And, you know, there was a story that, because what Trump's been saying over and over again is stop the count, stop the count. So all of these people, you know, armed with their AR-15s who've gone to the Maricopa County Courthouse, didn't get the nuance in the memo. And they were out there shouting, stop the count. Apparently, Trump thought that when he said stop the count, people would understand that he meant stop the count in the states where I'm ahead, continue the count in the states where I'm behind. But his followers didn't get that memo.
Well, that was actually because he just tweeted stop the counting. And yeah. And if he did tweet that, and at that moment, that meant he would have lost.
Yeah.
There was some really funny stuff that he tweeted. You know, he would like, I declare Michigan. It was like he was Vasco da Gama.
Well, it started a meme on Twitter where people were saying, I declare that I've won the Nobel Peace Prize.
But it was, I declare the state of Michigan. And it was like, it really was like, are you Magellan? Did you find a new continent or something like that? I mean, you know, it was, I declare the moon is a state that has three electoral votes.
Well, I declare that I have a full head of hair.
we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Norm Ornstein.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than two decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's Upwork.com. Upwork.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Let's talk about President-elect Biden, assuming that he's declared president-elect even before maybe this airs. What are his challenges going forward, aside from the transition, handling this transition? But we have a divided country. We just do.
Yes.
And that's this election. I think people were shocked at how divided we still are. I think obviously the polling looked like it would be a fairly short night, and it wasn't. And we have two universes of information that people get. We have people getting their stuff from Rush Limbaugh on Fox and Breitbart, and Facebook is feeding them what they want to see. How do you heal that? I mean, at least we got a guy who wants to do that, which is an advantage, I think, as opposed to Trump, who literally wanted to divide us even more. But how do you do that if you're Joe Biden? What's the approach?
So I call that universe the lies and the lying liars that tell them universe. And it's a huge challenge.
Yes, thank you.
Great book on that subject. And that's a real challenge. But before we get to that, keep in mind that the greatest challenge that he has is divided government in terms of his agenda. But remember, we have three Senate seats that are not decided that could make the difference in terms of whether we have divided or united government. One is in Alaska. Alaska has only counted barely over half its votes and will not count the rest until next week. And while Al Gross, the Democratic candidate, is behind substantially, there are actually enough mail-in ballots. He believes that he could win this, and other observers do too. You know, you got to be a little skeptical. I don't think that the mail-in votes in Alaska necessarily fit the profile of the mail-in votes in Pennsylvania, but it's still not decided. And then we know we're going to have these two runoffs in Georgia. And whatever happens in Alaska, if Democrats win those two, which will be on January 5th, then they have 50 seats in the Senate. And while that won't be enough to deal with any of the election-related issues on January 6th, starting on January 20th, they've got the majority. They can have the majority leader. And that is an enormous difference, because if they don't have it, we have this challenge from McConnell. And I'll get to that. But, you know, your larger point, there's no question that Joe Biden ran on and believes in healing the country and being president of all the people, which is a stark contrast from Donald Trump and his approach. And remember, Trump's approach isn't just reaching out to his base over and over. It's punishing the other side. It's one of the reasons why all of your noble work on the Electoral College, what's often lost in this is it's not just about an election. Donald Trump has stuck it to California over and over as the state has gone through these terrible times with wildfires, cutting off aid and sliming the state, because he doesn't care. He's not going to win those electoral votes. He wasn't going to win those electoral votes. If it were a popular vote, he'd have to pay attention. But that aside, Biden is going to try and reach out to everybody. You're going to have half the country that is not going to be on board with that. And remember, Obama did that same thing. The bigger problem or challenge is that one of the ways in which you do that is to try and get bipartisan governing. And we know right now that Mitch McConnell has very little interest in bipartisan governing unless it is in some place where it serves his own interest. So here's what's going to happen. In the lame duck session now, McConnell is going to do a 180. Instead of opposing a COVID relief package, he is going to push it because he'd like to get it done while Trump is still president, while he has some leverage from Trump. But then he can limit the size of the package, which is just what he'll do. And then when Biden becomes president and says, OK, the first thing we need to do is an ambitious package of COVID recovery, economic stimulus, and infrastructure, McConnell will likely say, we did that. We don't need to do any more. And he's already said he wants to make it a very limited package. So if that's the best we're going to get, we're going to be in some difficulty. Biden is not going to be able to do some of the things that his own base wants him to do, but also that the country needs: democracy reform, fixing the healthcare system, doing a number of things on climate change, dealing with the fact that beyond COVID itself, we're going to see a radical transformation because a lot of the jobs that were there before COVID are not going to come back. And then I would just say, you look at COVID itself, and it is emblematic of this divide that you're talking about. You know, one of the things I will say, Al, that really just sort of took me aback was watching the Republican governor of North Dakota. And North and South Dakota per capita have the highest rates of COVID infection per capita in the world right now. And we know why, because they basically opened things up and unleashed them. And he was crying over the deaths and the devastation in his state caused by COVID, but then said, but, you know, we have to go on the side of freedom. So forget about all of the public health measures that we ought to be doing: masks, appropriate PPE, making sure that we're prepared with our frontline workers. And that's not going to change. And I think when Joe Biden comes in, first, I fear and think that Trump is going to fire Anthony Fauci during the transition. fire a whole lot of people at the CDC. The signal that's being sent here is, as Biden comes in and says, we're going to follow the public health guidelines. And that means we need masks in public settings. We need social distancing. We can't have restaurants testing. Open and testing. And 40% of the country is going to see this as a direct assault on their freedoms. And we're going to see civil disobedience, or maybe worse, the kinds of things that we've seen when Trump sent those signals. But for a lot of those people out there, it's going to be worse when you have a Democratic president pushing it. And of course, all of that universe of media will be pushing back. They do not want the satisfaction of having Biden proven right by bringing the infection rate under control. And that's a part of the challenge that we have. If you don't get people accepting fundamental science, fundamental directions from an executive who's trying to set the right course, you know, this is going to be a long winter.
Well, let's talk about, go back to the stakes of the special elections in Georgia.
Yeah.
Because if we win both of these, and I can't imagine the mobilization on both sides in this special, because they're two up. The mobilization of resources is going to be national, and the focus is going to be national. God bless Stacey Abrams for mobilizing registration there. This is going to be like an enormous, enormous event.
No question. You know,
and the stakes are enormous, because if we get the two, if we get 50, then we have, with the vice president, the majority, right? That's very different. And then you get the question of the filibuster, because remember, we had 60 for a little while. I got there, and then until Scott Brown won. And there was a big difference between having 60 and not having 60. There's just going to be the question of, we're going to have to get rid of the filibuster at that point. You have some thoughts on that, I know.
Yeah, but let me step back a minute and say this. Here's where the difference starts. Mitch McConnell has already indicated that he is going to put big roadblocks in place for Biden's cabinet and sub-cabinet nominees to keep progressives out of key positions. He can do that. Even if you have 51 Republicans in the Senate and maybe Mitt Romney and Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins will provide some votes here and there, but he can keep these nominees from even getting a vote on the floor. And he can disrupt Biden's presidency right from the get-go while also blocking any judges.
He did that in spades,
yeah,
with Obama. He filibustered more executive appointees or nominations than had been filibustered in the entire history before him.
But he did that when they were in the minority. In the majority, he has much greater power.
This is part of the problem of two senators from,
yeah,
North Dakota, two senators from South Dakota, and two senators from California, which you kind of talked about Trump ignoring California. Remember, 40% of Californians are Republicans. So there are 40 million people in California. That means there are a heck of a lot of Republicans that are just ignored in that state. That's why we need a popular vote. That's why we need a national popular vote.
Exactly so.
But part of the reason that they can stop gun stuff is because, you know, North Dakota, South Dakota, they each have two, and West Virginia has two, and all these small states have two. And as you have pointed out, you know, what did you say? Like, what's the statistic you gave? Like the 70-30 statistic?
So by 2040, 70% of Americans will live in 15 of our 50 states. 50% of Americans will live in 8 states. But take that first set of figures. And what it means is that 30% of Americans in 20 years will elect 70 of the 100, if there are 100 senators. And it's not that the 30% are all Republican. Those states are a mixture. You've got, you know, small states like Delaware and Vermont and Maine that are not Republican. And the big states are not all Democratic, Florida, Texas. They may be moving in a different direction. But the big issue is that 30% is simply not representative of the diversity of the country. And people are moving to those states because that's where the economic dynamism is. and, you know, they represent the overwhelming majority of the GDP in the country. And, you know, increasingly, the Senate is going to become unrepresentative of the country, uninterested in the larger viewpoints in the country, working to take money from those rich states that are in the minority in the Senate and give it to the other states, kind of a reverse Robin Hood sort of thing in some ways. And increasingly, people are going to believe that their votes are just not legitimate. That's the problem with the Electoral College, too. And when you get to a point where 50% live in eight states, we're going to have more and more cases where the popular vote for the presidency is almost irrelevant. If we end up with more cases where the winner of the popular vote loses the presidency, people start to believe that their votes don't matter. And that's extraordinarily dangerous for a country. And, you know, when I hear conservatives just sort of reflexively say, we have a republic, not a democracy. In a republic, or to put it more accurately, a small R Republican form of democracy, people choose their representatives who then represent them and their interests. But we're in a world where people don't choose their representatives anymore. That's just a crisis in legitimacy. And that's where we're headed. You know, we're fortunate now that we didn't have a situation like 2016, where Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by 3 million, but lost the presidency. Now we're going to have Joe Biden, who will win the popular vote by 5 million or more, who, while he will have a substantial electoral vote victory, God willing, you know, still had a close call here, a closer call than.
But you had data like if he only won by 4 million.
Yeah.
He'd only have like a 50-50 chance or less than a 50-50 yeah. chance of winning the presidency. And that's screwed up. That's just screwed up.
It's you know, no other country operates this way. It's insane. By the way, no other country also, no other established democracy has a 2.5 month transition between the time that you have an election and you have a change in regime and the new one taking over. You have a lame duck there for 2.5 months. And that's insane as well.
Okay, well, then let's talk about what Trump can do during the transition.
Remember that just a week ago, he did an executive order that opened up the entire Tongass National Forest in Alaska to logging. And they're already starting. And once you do that, you can't put the trees back. We're going to see more of those, and more of those probably involving public lands and drilling and fracking and whatever else he can do.
So you think he can cut down the whole forest?
No, he can't.
Between now and then?
Believe me, the loggers know that they're going to have a limited time probably before this is undone. By the way, this is another element of why it's important to have a Senate. You know, when Trump became president and had the House and Senate, they used a law that enables Congress to nullify regulations and executive actions taken in the last 6 months to just blow away an awful lot of what Obama had done. It's more cumbersome otherwise, and it takes a little while. So he's going to try and do all kinds of mischief with executive actions. He did what I would view as a completely illegal executive order a couple of weeks ago to blow up the career civil service and create this category Schedule F, where you could arbitrarily move people with civil service protection into it, and then the president can fire them with no appeal. I'm expecting that he will do this and fire Anthony Fauci and fire Deborah Birx and fire a whole slew of people at the CDC and the FDA and a lot of people in the intelligence world. It's disruptive, and it just takes a while to replace them. I'm expecting that he will probably fire Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI, mm-hmm. and that what he will try to do with the Justice Department, and maybe getting rid of a lot of career people there in the public integrity section and the civil rights section, what I expect he will do is to try and make sure in the interim that he finds prosecutors more willing than the ones that have been there so far to go after Hillary Clinton and Hunter Biden and maybe even Joe Biden. There are just no limits to what this guy will do just to make life difficult. Biden is getting daily intelligence briefings now. There is no legal requirement that a president-elect get full intelligence briefings every day. And you can imagine Trump and his director of national intelligence, John Ratcliffe, withholding some vital information. And you can imagine Trump still as commander-in-chief doing some inflammatory or destructive things in the foreign policy front.
Well, as I've always said, now is not the time for the Joint Chiefs to take away the nuclear codes from Trump. Now is the time to give him the wrong codes.
Yes.
That's the first order of business today.
Yeah.
But let's talk about then the flip side of this, him going after, you know, Hillary, him going after Hunter.
Yeah.
The flip side of this is he going to pardon himself?
Oh, yes. And he'll pardon everybody around him.
So that is going to be kind of spectacular. But he'll still be liable, you know, he'll still be vulnerable to New York state law and the prosecutor in Manhattan going after him. So he's not going to be in the clear. So that's going to be an interesting part of the future.
Yeah. And, you know, we're speculating that it's possible that as he causes all of this disruption, and of course, he'll do rallies all the time now, trying to whip up people into a frenzy against Biden and the illegitimate election and all the illegal voters and all of that. It's possible he could go to Biden sometime in December and say, I'll tell you what, I'll resign early. Let Mike Pence pardon me federally. If you get the New York prosecutors to agree that they won't prosecute me, a kind of blackmail sort of strategy. I'm not at all sure that Biden could pull that off, but you can imagine that happening.
That's why Biden should wear a wire if he talks to Trump. That's all I'm saying.
Yes. And of course, if the New York prosecutors said okay and then reneged on that bargain afterwards, you know, that
would... Well, that's true. There's that. Norm, thank you.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.